When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome back to this special edition of The Drive. I am Dale Lally. He is Matt Williamson, and the Steelers just wrapping up OTA practice number 5 here at the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex. You are listening live on Steelers Nation Radio and ESPN 970. Beautiful day here in
Pittsburgh. Really was.
Yeah, we should be joined here presently by new Steelers guard Isaac Seumalo, and just watching him out here, Matt, he moves really well.
He's really impressive, and that, I don't mean to sound stereotypical, but a lot of the Polynesian guys are really thickly built with huge calves, and you think of them as just earth movers, maulers, and he does that. I mean, don't get me wrong. He pushes people around, but he's lean and long in the torso with, you know, some arm length to him. I don't think this is in the plans at all, but in a Faneca-like manner, I think you could throw him a tackle and he wouldn't embarrass himself. And I know he can play center, and he's a better pass blocker than he is a run blocker, and he's a really good run blocker.
You know, yeah, like it's
his
amazing.
His body type is impressive, though, is where I was going with it.
You know, and you heard the things that Kelsey said about him, Jason Kelsey.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask him about Kelsey.
Yeah. In Philadelphia, talked about him as the smartest player he's ever been around. Mm-hmm. I can tell you his background is very impressive. He's got a lot of family members who are college professors, mm-hmm. and things of that nature. His brother was a computer science major. I mean, this is the kind of family that this guy comes from.
Right.
You know, just very bright guys, and his dad's a football coach.
Yeah. I paid attention to him in free agency. I thought he'd be pricier than he was.
Yeah, I did too.
You know, after signing Herbig, I thought the guard market was probably closed here. So I kind of was out of sight, out of mind. And then, boy, it comes across my phone. Steelers are signing Isaac. And I'm like, wow. I'm really going to dig into him. And it was more impressive than I initially thought. You know, and again, the intellectual stuff, even before Kelsey came out and said that, I read a lot of things saying this is one of the smartest linemen out there and really technically sound. And with all respect to Kevin Dotson, the inconsistency at guard makes guys crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a little inconsistent at receiver or you're making big plays or even tackle, but guards need to be every snap, you know.
That's got to be something you can count on.
Right. And that, I think, is Kevin's biggest problem.
Without a doubt. And I think the talent is there.
Right. And there's some mental errors from time to time that might make Dan Moore or Cole look worse because he didn't do exactly his assignment. Well, those are done. I mean, now it's going to become a strength where it was a weakness just from a mental side of things.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, one of the things the Steelers are counting on here.
Mm-hmm. And at some point, Isaac's going to line up next to Jones. Maybe it's later than sooner. But what a great guy for a young first-round left tackle to line up shoulder-to-shoulder with.
Yeah, the Steelers, particularly the interior offensive line, goes from being something that a couple of years ago was like, ooh, well, this is pretty below
– duct-taped together a little bit,
well below average, too. Yeah. Now it might be, you know, one of the better interior threesomes in the league.
I think they're in the conversation for best guard pairing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in the conversation. I mean, there's probably three or four I could come up with the top of my head that are really, really good. But this might be number one. And I don't think Cole's a liability, but I don't think he's top 10 center either.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
But what I think they have, though, is three guys who are all average to above average at their positions. And that when you have three of those.
And I think they probably have five that can play at the NFL level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean,
there's depth there as well.
So it's really, you know.
Times have changed.
The complete makeover of that offensive line in 2 years.
In 2 years. That's hard to do.
It's really hard to do when you're paying a quarterback as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Now they are not, and so you can go out and you can make, you know, again, I don't know that they expected to sign Isaac Seumalo.
Or for Jones to get to them or be within striking distance in the first round. And, yeah, you're right. Maybe the plan was Herbig and some of these type of dudes, and it's better than last year, but it's not overwhelming. And but then the opportunity arises for it to be potentially overwhelming. Jump on it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, why wouldn't you do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, and it speaks volumes that guys do want to come play here.
Yeah, I like what you said there, though, about a 2-year total facelift of one of the hardest positions to do that at. I mean, like, people might remember the Chiefs were able to basically pull it off in 1 year.
But they had to trade away.
But they had to trade away Tyreek Hill. Yeah. I mean, they didn't make a lot of moves to make that happen, and they spent tons of money to do it. And that's a hard thing to do. I mean, to transform an entire O-line, including depth and starters and future starters, in a 2-year stretch. I mean, and it's still young.
And they did it without breaking the bank.
Right.
You know, that's the other thing. Yeah, the Chiefs were able to go out and you know, make over their offensive line, but they paid a lot of money to do it, and they paid a lot of draft capital.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Thuney was the highest-paid guard. I mean, they just flat-out purchased him. He was the most expensive guy out there, and they got their money's worth. No, don't get me wrong. Orlando Brown was expensive, cost him a first-round pick. You know,
then they paid him.
And then they paid him, and right. And they hit on Humphrey, and they hit on a mid-round guard that worked out well for them. So that's rare.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And what the Steelers are doing is rare. And someone just threw it out on Twitter, and I've known this, but it's also kind of amazing that Isaac is going to be the oldest starter on the offense. I mean, they're still so young on that side of the ball, and they're so young on the offensive line, and he's by no means old. That's not what I mean. He's in his prime.
Yeah, he's in his prime. The offensive lineman's still out there working, even though practice is over here, so we'll get him when he's coming off the field taking some extra reps out there. That's the thing, you know, when you see these guys putting in that kind of work, the extra work.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell you for a fact, you know, I come in here a lot during the off season, and the offensive line group has been one that's been a constant in here working out.
Yeah.
Chuks Okorafor is here. I think he has a room here.
Really?
You know, and coaches appreciate that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny, too. You know, I was chatting with Wolf last week, and, you know, unsolicited, he's like, boy, Dan Moore looks so much better to
me. He's just raving about Dan Moore.
Yeah, and I totally get it. You know, he's another one. We had the Wallace conversation, out of sight, out of mind. They drafted past him. Don't count him out. I mean, these guys get better. And I'm not saying he's, you know, Anthony Munoz, but I mean, if he takes a step forward this year too, or what about, I mean.
Well, I mean, again, we've talked about this, that just the addition of Seumalo beside him to where he's not concerned. I can't tell you whether – That was always in the back of his mind.
Who knows? Right.
But the communication.
But the stability there.
The communication from center out has to be better.
You know, like, I think they created that on the right side last year with Chooks and Daniels.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really good pairing. I'm not saying it's the best right side in the league, but it's in the top half. You know, and if you could get the left side to that level and probably better. I mean, if Jones and Isaac both hit their ceilings and, you know, he's already there. That could be the best left side in the league. I mean, it could be.
What do you think of the job Pat Meyer's doing with that group?
I'm glad you brought him up because I think he's an underappreciated asset to this team as well. I mean, I think everyone lumps the O-line coaches post-Munch, and none of them are as good as Munch, you know. Yeah. And that's probably true because he's, like, as good as there's ever been. I mean, he's phenomenal. But I think they've found a really good O-line coach here, and nobody tends to give him credit either.
Yeah, I think he's well-respected. You know, we ran into him at the combine while we were out having dinner.
Yeah, he was hanging with a bunch of O-line guys.
He was hanging there
with
like 15 other offensive line
coaches. A lot of beef in that room, right. A lot of scratching and sniffing and snorting and, drinking and hanging out. Yeah, O-line coaches are fun to be near even. Yeah, right. Like a herd of buffalo. But I think they found a really good one there. And, frankly, in between Munch and him, was questionable. It was kind of a revolving door there for a while. And I think that they've stabilized that. And I've said this a million times. If I was a new head coach getting hired or an owner or someone in charge of an organization, I would hire my head coach and then I'd say, I'll spend whatever you want for the best O-line coach I can get. I mean, that's more of a priority to me than a coordinator or a play caller. I mean, I just think developing that position is so hard at this level.
Well, I think that position and special teams coordinator –
it's an underrated one, too.
Special teams coordinator's got to –
you're just putting out fires.
I mean, you're juggling like 8 balls.
Yeah, they're on
at
fire.
At the same time.
Yeah. And then I always like to bring this up with special teams coordinators that D and offensive coordinators never deal with. But, like, hey, we cut your starter. Yeah. That dude was a starter on four special teams.
He was our number 40. He was our fifth safety, and we needed that roster spot.
But he was a starter for me in four phases. Yeah. You know, you just cut him. You don't cut my starting left guard. cut my starting strong safety. I mean, that's what special teams coordinators have to do with in week five.
And or you go through the week and this guy's sick. And that now you it has a trickle-down effect across the whole special teams landscape.
Right. And he
probably
don't.
He's on five different teams for me.
He's on five different teams, right. Or, hey, this week we're low on offensive linemen because of injuries, so we're going to take two of your core special teamers out of your starting 11. You know, they might be, okay, well, now I got to teach someone I hardly know how to run down on kickoffs and not screw it up.
Or Joey Bag of Donuts is our fifth corner, but two other guys are hurt, so now he's the nickel this week. And well, we don't want to put him out there.
Prefer he's not out there.
He's not going to play 25 special team snaps this week. He's going to play 15. So you got to pick when you're going to use him.
Right. We don't want him on punt team because he's going to be exhausted from defense before. Or, you know, your returners aren't – we don't want them out there because we plan on throwing the ball to him a lot. Or, I mean, it's just always a revolving door, and it's never stable.
That's what you don't want on the offensive line, though.
Right.
You want stability. And the Steelers had stability last year.
And they lucked into it to some degree. I mean, just because of injuries. But they – the fact that they got so many snaps from those five as a building block, and now you add even better, more talented players on top of that, because you still have what you built there last year. You know, it's not like it was a bunch of dudes that aren't coming back.
Yeah, it goes back to that what we talked about to open the show, the 18 returning starters on this team, but you may have overshot with some of the some of those guys. They may not be starters this year.
Not to any fault of their own getting worse, that somebody better showed up.
Yeah, because I mean,
certainly possible.
You know, is there an opportunity? Did Kevin Dotson get better this year? Well, there's a good chance.
Yeah, we talked about Dan Moore. Yeah. You know, I mean,
there's a good chance those guys got better, but you brought guys in who are better than them already.
And I'm not predicting him to revive his career, but even a guy like Green, I mean, he's still on the roster. He's going to be at camp. He looks like he's probably going to play. Focus on center. He may be your number two center and realize, you know, may learn some things, you know.
Yeah. And you're in year three. Again, that's
– I think LaRaven Clark's a valuable player.
It's one of the things that drives me crazy about fandom. And I get it. You're a fan. This is short for fanatics.
Yeah.
Nobody's allowed to get better.
Right.
Ever.
You always write the story on the guy.
Yeah. He stunk in those five games I saw him 3 years ago, so he must stink.
Yeah. And you don't think about the circumstances or why he got put into the situation he did. You know, was he in over his head? You know, they ask him more than they should have out of the guy. It really, was he drafted with the thought of he should be a year two starter, but we have an injury and he's a year one starter, or who knows?
Well, I mean, so for example, you look at Dan Moore thrown into the starting lineup at left tackle in the NFL as a fourth round rookie.
Right.
Like, is there any reason not to expect that guy to get better?
Right. And frankly, if you asked Dane Brugler, Mel, Todd, whoever, and said, before the draft, Dan Moore from Texas A&M is going to be a starting left tackle in week one, how do you think that's going to go? You know, like, well, he's probably going to struggle, you know.
Yeah.
And not that he's a bad prospect or a bad player, but I think Broderick Jones would struggle in week one.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I can remember Chooks getting thrown in out in Denver his rookie year against Von Miller.
Against Von Miller, right, by the way.
Good luck with that kid. Yeah, yeah. Here you go. Have at it. Yeah. And he held his own.
Somebody's going to block Bosa in week one.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, this isn't easy.
That's the way that goes. You know, it's just an interesting, tough position. Yeah, we're going to take a break. Again, the offensive lineman's still out there working on the field. Well, after practice is over.
So when we come back. That's a common theme of this team the last week or two.
We're hopeful to get Isaac Seumalo on here, so we want to make sure we get all of Isaac Seumalo on the show here. We don't want to cut him off. So he is Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally. You're listening to a special edition of The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio and ESPN 970. We are live from the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex here on the South Side. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back. I am Dale Lally. He is Matt Williamson. This is a special edition of The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio and ESPN 970. We are live from the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex, where Steelers just wrapping up OTA session number 5. And still some guys milling about out there on the field doing some extra work in as we...
Yeah, we can't divulge everything. But
I'm not going to give anything away here, but Minka Fitzpatrick's still out there working on his ball skills.
Mm-hmm. I always find it interesting what they choose to do with their free time. You know, practice is over. but I'm out here. I'm going to get a workout in. But what am I going to work on? There's always some very interesting drills. You know, he's doing some hand-eye coordination stuff now, which is really impressive. Like you said, ball skill stuff with, you know, not divulging too much. But there's so many different ways to train and get better. And some of these guys, it's not an accident that they turn into Pro Bowl players. You know
no.
what I mean?
Yeah. No. I can remember, you know, back in the day, waiting for Troy Polamalu for a full hour one day after. He was the last guy on the field.
Okay.
I just waited him out, and he knew I was there. But, you know, he's just maybe his second year in the league, his second training camp, and just waiting him out and waiting him out and waiting him out. And finally he came walking over, and we you know, we had a 20-minute conversation about, you know, his rookie year and everything, and you know, really good stuff. But he put the time in. He put that kind of effort into it.
Yeah.
You know.
So you have 1,000 times more experience than me in this situation. But when I worked for ESPN, ESPN, as they do now, had a Steeler reporter, you know, yeah. At one point there was just AFC North or whatever. And I think the Steeler reporter at the time was ill or something along those lines. And they knew I lived in Pittsburgh. And they said, hey, Matt, can you pretend to be a reporter for a day? Go down to the Steelers facility and interview Antonio Brown. So I'm here sharp. I'm like, boy, I'm a fish out of water. I don't know. But they're like, here's 10 questions to ask them. There's certain things we need for this huge article we're working on. Anybody can do it. Just sit there and record it. I'm like, all right, fine. So I get here, and I'm just really stiff and not knowing what I'm doing. You know, it's not like I'm much
unlike what you are now.
But I waited for like an hour for him to get off the field.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like notorious, or in a good way, he was out there forever. I'm like, I was asking people, I'm like, is this normal? I mean, for him it is. It's not for most players.
Yeah.
You know, you can usually get them reasonably after practice, but he was out there for an hour.
Yeah. Did you get your 10 questions?
I think so. I'm trying to remember what the results were. I think I did and sent them in, but yeah.
Yeah, and AB could be a little difficult with that kind of stuff.
But he wasn't great by accident either.
No, he worked.
That's my point, right.
They put the time in. You know, you get – and I preach this to the guys that I coach now. You get out of the game what you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so much – I mean, there are guys that get by just on, God-given talent.
Absolutely. I'm sure Minkah Fitzpatrick would be a fine player if he didn't do the extra stuff.
But when
he's
better. When that talent intersects with the work ethic, mm-hmm. is when it becomes really special.
Yeah, 100%. And say what you want about AB, his work ethic was maybe even greater than his talent.
Yeah, I mean, they had to say, whoa – more
yeah.
often than they had to say, sick him.
I know that was the book on Najee coming out. You know, you got to hide his helmet, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, and some of these guys will work too hard even.
Yeah, and that's just a pure love of the game and a love that, you know, you want to be the best. You want to, mm-hmm. you know what your weaknesses are in your game and you want to get them better. Or you have something that you, I'm pretty good at this, but I could be great.
I could be great at it. I know I'm not quite where I could be at that, you know, right.
Yeah.
You know. And let alone the tape work. I mean, we don't see any of that.
Yeah.
And when you're with an organization, there's this guys, you know, linebackers in particular that are safeties that are in the office, of course, quarterbacks that are in there for hours and hours and hours just grinding tape.
And watching tape, like, it reminds me of the white men can't jump line. You know, I watch the tape. But do you see the tape?
Right. There's an art to watching tape and not just being in front of the projector. I know they don't use a projector anymore. But, I mean, there's an art to really utilizing your minutes and hours there and looking for the right things. And a lot of young guys come to the league and say things like, yeah, I spent hours and hours watching tape, but they're still running the wrong way and misdirection and stuff because they're not doing it properly.
I mean, you got to know what you're watching, know what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where –
it's like Patrick Peterson will help so much.
I was just going to bring that up. A guy like Patrick Peterson who's watched so much tape and knows how to watch the tape, mm-hmm. knows what he is looking for.
Yeah.
The keys and the things that, you know, when this receiver does this or when the quarterback, his foot is 3 inches to this direction.
Look at his stance. Yeah. He's going to come out and, you know, it's not going to be a handoff or, you know, things like that. I don't know. I'm totally spitballing here, but it wouldn't shock me one bit if Patrick Peterson – goes home on his iPad or his TV or whatever and spends a day watching Amari Cooper, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, you know, now Odell. And he's played against all those guys, I'm sure, to some degree. And you watch them going in. But when you know they're now in your division, that everybody has a tell. I mean, everybody has the Teddy KGB Oreo, you know, to some degree. You know, like when he aligns this way, he's probably blocking or he's going to go through the motions, you know.
Yeah.
But whenever he has this little twitch – ball might be coming his way, or right. You know, he's taking it deep, or you know, everybody has tendencies.
Well, I can remember, in fact, you know, when I did the Antonio Brown show, there was somebody put out there that you know, on social media, that whenever Brown would retighten his gloves at the line of scrimmage, it was a pass play.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that stuff's real.
I brought that up to him. I said, there's a theory out there that, you know, whenever you tighten your gloves at the line of scrimmage, it's going to be a pass. And when you don't, mm-hmm. it's going to be a run play.
Okay.
And, you know, I think he looked at that, and he started tightening his gloves every time.
Did he?
It's the same thing I tell young pitchers. Like, if I'm going to throw a curveball, I don't want to tell the batter I'm throwing a curveball.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't want to, you know.
I'm sure they hold it in their glove differently.
I'm not going to play with the ball in the glove. Yeah. If you're going to play with – if you have to play with the ball in your glove – when you're throwing a curveball, play with the ball in your glove every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Do it every single time.
It's like Jim Brown, rest in peace. You know, he would protect. He would get up super slow every time, so it didn't look.
Right.
Every time, so everyone didn't know when he was injured. And the book on Jerry Rice was, the guy's got no tells. Every route looks exactly the same. Yeah. You know, his stem is always the same. His release is always the same. And people talk about what makes a great route runner. I mean, that's a big part of it. Is not giving things away so blatantly.
Yeah, I saw somebody put out the top 10 route runners in the NFL yet last night on social media. I saw that, and Deontay Johnson was on that list.
I'd say he should be.
I think that's an underrated – like so many people look at, well, he's 6'2", and he runs a 4.3 40, and he does this. Does he run routes?
Right, and frankly, Pickens needs to work on it.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have a real expansive route tree yet, you know, and he didn't at Georgia. So he needs work in that regard. But the guy next to him is one of the best in the league at it.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly,
and that doesn't come by accident either.
Deontay Johnson
works at that.
Absolutely.
You know, because he's not the biggest. He's not the strongest. He's not the fastest.
Mm-hmm.
So you better have something else that you can win with. And for him, it's the route running.
I mean, Devontae Adams might be the best route runner in the league. I mean, he's certainly
– He's like a 4-6 guy.
And he was a second-round pick.
Yeah.
He's not special athletically. Sure, he's good. I mean, he has talent. Of course he does. But he wasn't a top – he wasn't Jamar Chase. You know, I mean, he wasn't a no-brainer top 10 pick. You know, I mean, that came from work.
And route running
– Deontay was a third round.
Route running allows you to get behind secondaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to be a 4-3 guy to get behind the secondary. If you run routes well, you can, you know, all it takes is one false step from the cornerback and you're behind.
I mean, it's not like you run a 5-flat.
You can still run.
Yeah, the difference between a 4-5-5 and a 4-4-flat isn't that much in the course of a football play if the defensive back has one false step or is leaning the wrong way. Stephon Diggs was a fourth-round pick. He's an elite route runner.
I think he was number one on that list.
Was he?
You know, he's a 4-5, low 4-5 guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good athlete, but he's not special.
But you see him behind a lot of defenses.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and that's absolutely a learned skill.
I mean, we're still waiting here for Isaac Seumalo to come out.
No promises at this point.
Yeah, they are off the field here. He outlasted the Steelers PR.
He was putting the work in.
He was putting the work in, and well, the field is now clear, so that part of the day is, well, no, there's still one guy out there. So
there is.
Getting their extra time, and we're still out here. And so we'll keep bringing you all the news and notes here from the Steelers OTA sessions here. OTA session number 5 in the books. That means we are halfway to minicamp.
Yeah, good point.
And then
this is officially halftime.
Yeah.
And then from there,
we'll go on to training camp.
It's been a great environment. It's been fun to be here.
I wonder, you know, so last year training camp was the first year that it had been open in a couple of years because
COVID
of COVID
and all that, right?
Do you expect training camp to be a little more robust this year? Not that it was bad last year, but
right.
I think
more back to what you think is normal and what you've been used to. I would imagine. I mean, that's more of a question for you than me, to be honest, but I would think that's true.
I was just thinking about that. I'm like, you know, because last year, I mean, it was everything. You were back, but you weren't back.
There were still some restrictions.
Yeah.
I mean, it affected
now
us.
Now the CDC has lifted the, you know, apparently COVID is no longer the epidemic that it was or the pandemic that it was. That's behind us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a doctor's appointment a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't have to wear a mask.
Wow, even in a doctor's
office. Even in the doctor's office, which was, you know, different than it's been for the last 3 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so we're out of that portion of this. And You know,
yeah, I would think it gets back to being good old St. Vincent's.
Does the NFL adjust to that as well now? You know, are the COVID restrictions that were, or not just the restrictions, but the accommodations that the league made for COVID? Some of them they've kept. Like the extra
some good
two,
things came out of it.
The extra two guys on game day and things of that nature that you could get.
Expanded practice squads, things like that. I think teams started scouting differently. Hey, we can do some of this via Zoom. Yeah. Do we really need to send these guys on planes all over the country? Not even for health reasons.
All we're
going
to do is we want to sit down and talk to the guy.
Yeah.
We can do that on a video call.
Save some expenses, save a lot of time. I'm sure it's changed coaching to some degree. I'm sure the players – my wife couldn't be any further from a football player, but she gets so much more done at home than getting on the tee, going downtown, going to the bank, and coming back. You know what I mean? So I'm sure that's true for players too. We were talking about grinding tape. Could probably do it from home, you know, with today's technology, and you could just FaceTime your coach and be like, hey, what's this all about?
What they did during COVID. Do that. And so, you had guys, everybody learning.
You adapt.
Yeah.
And some good things come out of it. You know, I mean, any crisis or bad thing that's happened in the history of the world, something good came from it because people adapted, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's much like, there's always, anytime you take a step in a different direction, there are pluses and minuses that come out of it. For example, Tang came out of the space. Space exploration. Velcro.
Things like that.
You didn't start the space program to come up with Velcro.
right.
But it was, a byproduct.
We could use this for something else.
Yeah, it was a byproduct of space travel.
Absolutely. But I do think the NFL's gone through some of that, too, and I'm sure all sports have. You know, where you were forced to not – and
Tang was a bad example, by the way. I don't know why that popped into my head. But
I do think certainly the NFL and football coaches across the league are such creatures of habit or across the whole sport.
See, this is just the way we've always done it.
We've always
done it.
Until
you couldn't do it that way.
Right. We don't want to hear about analytics. This is what we do. You know, you have to have 2 days, blah, blah, blah. But when you're forced to change, you realize we might be behind if we don't adapt like the teams that are starting to win, and understand where they're at.
Yeah, and so I do think that there are some, many good things that came out of COVID.
Being forced to do things differently. Yeah,
and we've seen it just in the general work world. I mean, there are a lot of people that don't go back to the office on a full-time basis. Maybe they go in 2 days a week instead of five.
That's where my wife's at now, and she thinks those are her least productive days because she's busy, not doing work while she's transporting back and forth.
Yeah, so, but these sessions, still very important.
I think they are. I think there's a lot to take out of them. I think that there's a lot of learning going on the field. Certainly when you read headlines across the league, there's a lot of overreactions. This first-round pick isn't running with the ones, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I don't look too much into that stuff, but I think it makes you a better player and teaches you how to be a pro.
Yeah, and I think, so many new faces on the Steelers roster this year.
Yeah.
These OTA sessions are doubly important, and I think that's why, for example, last year, if you remember, they could have had three more sessions.
Right.
And they didn't. They chose not to.
I mean, just think of the status
this year
of the
they're
quarterback
have those
position.
Sessions. Yeah.
Right. Good point. I mean, just think how much different the quarterback situation was 1 year ago when we were here, and now it's a lot more set, and a lot of groundwork, especially on offense, was poured last year.
Yeah.
It was a lot of that youth. So
Kenny Pickett talked about it on his first day here. He's like, I'm so much farther ahead of where I was as an offense. We're so much farther ahead of where we were.
I'm sure.
Foundation has been poured.
Yeah. And now Allen Robinson and Isaac and Herbig and these guys,
they got to get on a moving train.
Yeah. But those veterans shouldn't have any problem. It'll be tough for the rookies as it is every rookie. That's not a common problem or that's an uncommon problem across the league. The Washingtons of the world are going to have to learn.
Yeah, and that's what they're here for. That's why we have these sessions, these OTA sessions. They didn't used to have this stuff.
No, right.
20 years ago, there was no such thing as an OTA.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think they're good.
Yeah, I think so as well. But we're going to take another break. He is
Alrighty.
Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally. You're listening to a special edition of The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio. We will be back with more here live from the Steelers OTA sessions at the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex on ESPN 970 and Steelers Nation Radio right after this. Welcome back. I am Dale Lally. He is Matt Williamson, and this is a special edition of The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio, and we have a special guest here joining us now. That would be one Thomas Opferman of The Standard. What's going on?
Not quite the guest you guys were looking for, but I figured,
Phil's job.
Why not?
It's good to have you.
It's kind of like in baseball. I don't want to call myself the closer coming in. It's kind of like when the position player comes in and you're already down by 40 runs. I'll just come in to,
Or you're up by 40
get
runs.
Get the arm going a little bit. Get a nice 45 mile per hour over the plate. Exactly.
But you were out here today, Tom. You got a chance to see the OTA practices. What were your impressions?
First time, seeing guys in person. I know we can't really talk in a lot of detail, but – they're big, man. This is a bigger team than it was last year. I think that's for sure. Washington is overwhelming. The offensive linemen are overwhelming. Jones, Dan Moore looks much bigger than he was. Their mantra seemed to be, let's get physical, let's get nasty. Andy Weidel comes in. He's kind of cut from that cloth. And you can't tell how it's going to end up until they play games. But right now it looks like it's on the right track.
Yeah, it's a continuation kind of how they finished last season when they were just – pounding people at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
I think
they're not hiding their intentions at all.
No, they might as well put it up on the big, the scoreboard. Hey, we're going to run the football. We're going to be physical.
Have a Goodyear blimp go by carrying a banner, right? And not only they, not a lot of fat guys either.
No.
There are a lot of really lean, powerful players with length too. Long arm guys, especially at corner. Some of these dudes. I mean, even like Allen Robinson's impressive on the hoof. Everybody looks the part, and it's a good start.
Yeah, and you just mentioned the secondary. I think that might be the unit that I'm the highest on right now
really?
In the offseason. Yeah, I know you lose Sutton, you lose Mullett, you lose Edmonds in that secondary, but I think they're a better secondary right now, at least on paper. Excited to see Porter and Peterson on the outside if that's where they end up. But I think he just got so many options. You guys were talking about Levi in the first hour of the show today.
Right.
I think that might be a less is more kind of guy. Like, the more that you can wean him off of a big-time role, you're going to get more production out of him.
Could be.
Always thought he was a really good number two in Buffalo next to Tre'Davious White. He's a little bit older now, but you're not asking him to be anything more than a three right now. Maybe he does become a two, Dale, like you said, but he doesn't have – there was never really, like, that number one last year.
They didn't have that,
And he kind of had to try to do it, and Akello had to kind of try to do it, but no one could. Now he just has to kind of be the number two at the most. So I think it's perfect for him.
The guy that I'm interested in that secondary is Chandon Sullivan. And I'll go back to 2014 when they signed Bryce McCain from the Houston Texans. And people went, oh, my God, Pro Football Focus had him as the lowest-rated cornerback in the NFL. And then at the end of the season when he left to go to the Miami Dolphins because they signed him to a one-year deal, what are they going to do without Bryce McCain? God, he had such a good year. He was their best cornerback this year.
Made good money on the open market. And right.
You don't know what the cornerbacks, and we do actually kind of know what the cornerbacks were asked to do last year in Minnesota, and that was play pretty vanilla.
Yeah,
a
very
lot of zones.
Very little blitz.
And there was no blitz. There was no pass rush. They had like 32 sacks.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't have any kind of help there defensively. And so, if you're gonna play a lot of zone coverage, particularly if you're the slot guy, and they're playing a lot of zone, you're gonna give up catches.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's just
without much pass rush and much blitz to help you. It was not an easy situation for the defensive backfield.
Well, that's what when Peterson sat down with you last week. That's kind of what he said, right? He didn't trash the Vikings defense, but he was just saying, you can tell this is a step up a little bit just from a couple days being out here.
Asked him how – I knew the answer, but I wanted him to say it.
Yeah.
How different is this scheme and coverage responsibilities that versus last one? He's like, very different. I mean, to sum it up, very different.
2 days out.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see how he figures into the equation because he's been a starting nickel, not just in Minnesota last year, but in Green Bay before that.
And those guys aren't household names. Going back to Bryce McCain, Steeler Nation's not going to go, oh, my God, you signed Channing Sullivan, who I'd never heard of. But that doesn't mean they aren't having quality careers.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's a – and this is not to trash Arthur Millett, but that's an upgrade over Arthur Millett.
I think so, too.
And if he can be a combination of Sutton and Millett, because that's what they've had to do the last couple of years, even when they had Mike Hilton early in his tenure –
situational nickels.
It was situational nickel. If you just have a nickel and he is your nickel and that's what he does, okay.
Yeah, and you tell the offense less.
Yeah,
you know, if that's
or if you could play more dime because of that, because we're going to bump Patrick Peterson into the slot, and then I'm playing Porter and Wallace on the outside, because you've got different options at defensive back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that works too.
So to change gears on you, Tom, while we have you here the last few minutes, you're a huge Pitt guy. Pitt's next door.
That's right.
Kenny's second year. What are you expecting from him in year two?
I don't think he's going to take some monstrous leap.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't ever think he's going to get to the Burrows or the Mahomes level, but I really don't think he has to at all to mm-hmm. win. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger was never the greatest quarterback in the NFL. He was always around Brady and Manning. Those mm-hmm. two were much better than him. Mm-hmm. He snuck two rings out from underneath those guys. Like, if the team is right around him and he is good enough, I think you can win with that guy.
Yeah.
I just don't know if it's going to happen quite this year. I think maybe a couple years
stuff.
Away. Yeah. But I think that what the rookie year showed is that it's not too big for him, the league.
Mm-hmm.
And he's ready to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. That's not like a, is he even a starter? No, he's one of the 32 best quarterbacks that there are. So
I think that's step one for any rookie.
Yeah. And I expect him to be better this year. Not quite to the level where, you know, maybe he's the sole reason he's winning you 6-7 games. But mm-hmm. I just feel like the improvement's inevitable. You saw the improvement all of last season. Too many interceptions in the first half of the season.
Yeah.
Barely any in the second half of the season. That's coachability. That's improving. It's playing smarter. I just think it's going to continue to carry on that momentum. And I like the size he's put on, too. You know,
yeah, I think that's big.
He's got to protect himself a little bit more. The concussions are the thing that worries me a little bit. But offensive line looks better.
Mm-hmm.
They fixed his helmet last year. You know, they're proactively trying to attack this to make sure that it doesn't become a problem like maybe down in Miami it is. So I'm very confident in him not regressing at all, taking steps forward. I question how big the leap might be this year. But it shouldn't be monstrous, I don't think, in a second year. I mean,
no, I don't expect him to be the best quarterback
in
the league.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
No, if he throws between 20 and 25 touchdown passes
this year,
more importantly, doesn't get to double digits in interceptions,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a huge step forward. I think if
that's a reasonable expectation.
I think if you play the entire season, and let's say he throws 22 touchdown passes,
mm-hmm. gets better in the red zone.
That's a modest improvement, but throws 7 or 8 interceptions. I think that's a really good second year.
Mm-hmm.
And at Pitt, he was never, you know, adverse for making a risky throw, pushing the ball down the field, being explosive. So I think you see a lot more of that in his second year as well in the NFL.
Yeah.
You have the leash on a little tight sometimes with a rookie.
I don't think he's conservative.
No.
No. There was nothing about, especially the senior year at Pitt,
there was nothing
conservative about his play.
And I think the other thing that you look at with Kenny Pickett, guys, are the how he played in the fourth quarter down the stretch in games.
He did win you some games.
He did win you some games.
Yeah,
and so if he can do it, if your defense and your running game can keep you in the game, he has shown that he can win you the game when it's on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, you know, I don't think there's no formula for clutch. There's no, you know, analysis for clutch. There's nothing out there that says, well, you know, this guy, when the game's on the line, is this, you know, he's the sixth best player when the game is on the line, because each, you know, game situation is different. So you got to trust your eyes on that. And when the game was on the line, more often than not, I mean, the only time that he didn't was in Miami, and I think he learned from what happened in Miami.
And it's not like he was doing it against the Texans, right?
Yeah.
He was in Baltimore.
No, right.
Yeah. And I remember in that game on the TV broadcast, they flashed up a graphic before the drive saying, like, Ravens have not given up a fourth-quarter touchdown drive in X amount of quarters. And he goes 98 yards down the field and puts him in the end zone and wins the game. Like, that absolutely
And that had nothing to do with them missing Lamar. That was
defense.
Yeah. Defense, right.
That was a playoff-level defense that he went up against and drove right down the field. So that, I think, alone is where you get the confidence that this dude is – cut out for this kind of stuff. This dude's not overwhelmed by the NFL.
I say this about 80% of the rookie starting quarterbacks, but the two areas that he really struggled were between 10 and 20 yards and in the red zone. Well, you go get Allen Robinson, who's a big red zone guy and operating out of the slot on in-breaking routes between 10 and 20 yards. Washington, who knows what you'll get out of him as a rookie year, but he sure profiles as a middle-of-the-field player down the field as well as red zone. And there's some other examples. So they're going to add things to make his weaknesses strengths, and I think they did a good job with that.
I know he had no touchdowns last year.
Mm-hmm.
Deontay's a really good receiver.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people like the Pickett to Pickens kind of thing, and maybe that will be the one.
And that could develop too.
Yeah.
Right.
But I just think Deontay's going to be Kenny's best friend this season.
Yeah.
I don't know how he wouldn't be any quarterback's best friend. He's always open.
He's always open. Right. There's a reason why Ben Roethlisberger
loved him, right?
Threw him 165 passes every year.
Yeah.
He had no choice.
Open, right.
He's open. So you throw to the open guy. Tom, we appreciate you stopping by here.
No problem. I'll be back tomorrow.
All right. Maybe we'll do a session with you then.
Yeah, we'll do that again. But our guest here has been Tom Opferman. You can hear him on these very airwaves on The Standard, which he does a very fine job on with
Absolutely.
Jacob
check
Breck.
That out.
Yeah, you got to check that show out. You can also listen to us.
You can find The regularly. Standard everywhere you can find The Drive, right?
Absolutely.
That's right. Yeah.
So absolutely. So lots of great comments, and lots of great programming on Steelers Nation Radio. But that is going to do it for us today here from the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex. As the Steelers just wrapped up OTA session number 5, unfortunately, we missed out on Isaac Seumalo. Hopefully, maybe we'll get him tomorrow. You have to keep
or listening. Somebody. Yeah.
We'll get somebody. We're getting somebody tomorrow. I can guarantee you that because I'm going to ensure that we do that. But that's going to do it for our show today. So for my partner Matt Williamson, for CJ here on site keeping us on the air, I am Dale Lally. We thank you for listening to this special edition of The Drive on Steelers Nation Radio.
Turns out, a delightfully clean home can make for a delightful start to the day. At Mrs. Meyer's, everything they make is inspired by the garden. With plant-derived and other thoughtfully chosen ingredients, their cleaning products smell like a dream and work like the Dickens, leaving your home sparkly clean and your to-do list tackled in no time. Goodness, there's no better feeling than that. Mrs. Meyer's, rooted in goodness. Visit MrsMeyer's.com today.